haven't heard this before. This is interesting. I wonder why that is. Because, you know, if you stick to, say, just reading science fiction or watching movies, directors and authors will convey completely different things, right?
Oh, definitely.
Look at, what's it called? Ex Machina, where the guy literally falls in love with this AI robot. I won't spoil it for you, but she goes crazy.
Does she go crazy or does she just go robot?
That's fair. Or is she human? You know, or is she really thinking like a human and acting like a human? But this guy falls in love with this robot, and I never would have thought of something like the Uncanny Valley.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. I mean, obviously, it's a technological hurdle to overcome that, but hopefully that the ethical dilemma about robots that look exactly like humans will be something we won't have to face for too much longer. Now, it's interesting you brought up science fiction. I am personally a huge science fiction fan, and I really like science fiction because it's often in the future, so you have these almost ridiculous situations where you have people and there's some new technology, maybe it's sentient robots or whatever, and then you just kind of press go and you see what happens, and you know, the book evolves along a plot that's hopefully somewhat believable. You know, the better the book, the more believable the plot is.
Yeah.
And you see where it goes. And a lot of these issues, these ethical issues, have been explored in science fiction novels before, also in movies. You mentioned Ex Machina or Ex Machina. So it's quite interesting to see that these ethical dilemmas have been played out for a long time. I mean, even Frankenstein, you know, Frankenstein's monster, the original artificial intelligence. There's so many ethical considerations.
That's true. That's not bad. Okay.
That's actually a great book to read if you want to dive into these issues a little bit more, because it really looks at it from both Dr. Frankenstein, the creator's view, and the monster's view.
So, yes, I agree that, you know, science fiction has explored this realm and people have thought about this and whatnot. But two things I would say is that, A, we haven't been thinking about this nearly long enough, and B, from a scientific point of view, I think there's a huge bias there, in regardless of what you do. I think it's weird we're talking about robot ethics because we're really talking about an intersection of science and philosophy and other, you know, non-scientific things. But that's why I really liked A. Jung Moon's research and her survey of 300 participants, because what she found was every situation had some level of rejection. In terms of how the robot was being used and justifications for why, as well as some acceptance. You know, they saw efficiency, they saw, yeah, you know, I see some value in this. This is beneficial. What was most interesting to me about her work was that it wasn't really an issue about efficiency or does this robot do its job well. It was how autonomous this thing, right? People seem to be paranoid almost to an extent.
Do you think this is something that is just based on what we've heard about in science fiction stories or movies?
Ooh.
Or do you think this is actually like an inbuilt human fear, you know, fear of the other sort of thing?
Yeah, is it a self-fulfilling prophecy or is it something innate?
I've always kind of actually wondered this is going off on a tangent, but yeah. I've always wondered this about insects, you know, is the fear of insects, is that built into us or is that something that we learn to fear
over
time?
Yeah, a social construct that we've like, you know, we just don't see often, so it must be creepy and new. I think it's a good mix of both. You know, I'm not going to give you one or the other. I think it's a solid mix of both. I say that because anything new and foreign to us at any given time is always going to be scary. But then there's also this, we have an imagination of where things can go, right? There are scientific advancements we never would have thought of, and there are scientific advancements we're terrified of. Personally, I'm terrified of Tesla's new release. You know, they just updated our cars to have some level of autopilot just with a software download.
But it's still in the beta. I mean, it's, yeah. You know, they've kind of released it with this warning saying, okay, let the Tesla drive itself, but don't take your hands off the wheel.
Yeah, for sure, right? I don't trust people on the road when they're paying attention. Now you're asking me to, like, let them not?
But I guess that's the contradiction, right? Because like 90% of accidents, this is a number I grabbed off the internet, but yeah, it's probably close. 90% of the accidents are caused by human error. And people eat and read when they're driving now anyways. Yeah. I mean, look at all the idiots who text and drive.
Yeah, do not text and drive. If you're listening at home, don't be an idiot.
Yeah, so like, I guess maybe even though it's a little bit terrifying to us to give up this control, people are saying that automating your cars is going to reduce the accident rate tremendously. There's actually a good example of ethical problems that can arise with that. So there's a famous philosophical ethics problem called the trolley problem. Basically, the idea is that there's a runaway train. You see a runaway train coming at a group of, let's say, picnickers who are picnicking on the track. It's a family of five. You are just a bystander, but you are sitting right by a switch that can throw this train onto another track that will kill one person. So the ethical dilemma is, do you throw that switch? The problem is an ethical dilemma is because there's a difference between letting someone die and killing somebody.
Yeah.
And you can mix it up a little bit more, you know? Okay, what about if the family of five is now, five convicted murderers and the other person is a young baby?
Yeah. You know? As you add more information, what changes, right?
Right. And you can see where this is going to come up a lot with self-driving cars. You know,
I can see it with pretty much any robot we have or any system, really.
Well, totally. Just to give you sort of a concrete example with the cars, let's say you're driving down the road and there's a car coming towards you, and let's say you're driving five people in your car, and the only way to escape it is to swerve and take out the motorcyclist beside you.
Mm-hmm.
So what does the car do? Does it let you and five people die, or does it swerve and kill the motorcyclist beside you?
Right.
How do we decide what the car is going to do in that case? I mean, at some point in the code, you have to say, if this, then this, you know? And you have this scenario where, what does your car decide to do? Does it count how many people are in your car and then says, I'm going to kill the least number of people? Or does your car always say, I'm going to protect whoever's in my car no matter what?
Yeah.
You know, how do you decide what to do? Yeah, it's interesting because I think often we as scientists get caught up in this mindset that science is the only thing that can guide decisions, when in fact it's only one way of guiding decisions. Often it's the best way, but in things like this, you need to think about ethics as well. This often comes up in medicine as well, too. So it's interesting to look at this sort of collision between philosophy and science. All right, well, I think we better wrap it up there. You've been listening to Sharing Science Radio on CITR. Thank you, Rohit, for joining me.
Thank you, Alan.
I'm Alan Manning. Earlier today, we heard from Nathan Evitz. Please, if you liked what you heard in our episode or have any comments or want to suggest a future episode, you can write to us at radio@ubcsharingscience.org. That's radio@ubcsharingscience.org. We would love to hear from you. Stay tuned. Up next is Inner Space. See y'all next week.
Here, but luckily I have some nice ambient content to fill you in with, and hopefully I can be back to finish it off. Stay tuned. I'll be here. My name's Christian, and I'll be guiding you till about 8 p.m. Thank you.
We'll be right back.
Shouts to Zephon on this track, also known as Precipitation. And also just want a big shout to the whole New Forms Festival, all the volunteers, all the artists that made for a really special weekend. Got to see some people I've been wanting to see forever. Standout sets from Pie Corner Audio. Lots of local content as well. Slow Riffs, Hear Me. Great, great stuff. I'll get back to that later. I'm going to leave you with a little ambient hour and head off to the programs meeting outside. And then I'll be back. See you later. Thank you.
Thank you. energetic, more productive, and lift my spirits. Tell your mind, I can become more energetic, more productive, and lift my spirits. Tell your mind, I can become more energetic, I'm more productive, and lift my spirits.
Yeah. You are listening to CITR Radio 101.9 FM, broadcast out of Vancouver. This is your host. Oh, sorry. We're broadcasting on the unceded territory of the Musqueam people. Can never forget that acknowledgement. Welcome back to Mixed Cassette. This is your host, Makonnen. We have gone through 10 mixed cassettes already. We're going, this is Mixed Cassette 2.0, so like a video game. We're going to another level here. This is going to be the existential show as a result. We have some